When did you first notice God making an appearance in your life? God makes a dramatic appearance in the life of Cornelius, the Roman centurion. We heard it in the first lesson. Before Peter, gets really cranked up good on his sermon, the Holy Spirit falls on Cornelius and his household. They begin speaking in tongues and praising God. And Peter rips up his sermon and just starts looking for some water, some baptism. Last week it was the Ethiopian eunuch, and this week a Roman soldier and his family who are powerfully grasped by the knowledge and love of Christ. Luke, the author of the book of Acts, gives us these vignettes, I think, to show us how is it that women and men across the Roman Empire began to think it is worth everything for them to follow and worship a crucified Jew. But of course, to understand what happened to Cornelius, you got to get the rest of the story. You got to go back a chapter. And the first thing Luke tells us about him is, quote, he was a devout man who feared God. He gave alms generously to the people and prayed constantly to God. So long before Peter shows up, long before Cornelius has a vision of an angel telling him to go call Peter, just happens to be down the road at the beach, long before that, the God of Israel is working, think about this, the God of Israel is working in the life of a Roman soldier. Luke is telling us that God works in a person's life before they hear about Jesus or visit a church, or have any awareness that God may exist and might be up to something. So, rather than saying, when did you first notice God appearing, we might ask, when did God first make an appearance in your life? Some folks from a certain evangelical tradition can say, God showed up when I prayed a prayer like I did as a freshman at the University of Georgia. You've heard this story many times. Said the prayer, and I remember the moment sitting on my bed in Millage Hall. Don't remember the exact date when I prayed for God to come into my life. Later on, though, of course, I knew and I acknowledged. I grew up in the church, and I knew God had been working in my life, at St. Anne's Episcopal Church in Atlanta, doing what you do, Coming to worship with the parents, church school, youth group, serving as an acolyte. Many of you have that kind of experience. But it has taken me many more years to be able to imagine that God was also working in my life when I was playing hide and seek with other kids in the neighborhood. Remember, summer comes and it gets dark and you're out there. Oh, great times. Or just watching TV by myself. In fact, the Spirit, I'm convinced, was also swirling around me even when I was doing those things I ought not to have done, but which teenagers think it is their job to do, if for no other reason just to mess with their parents. Yet even today, to believe that God is working at every moment of every day goes against my default setting, and maybe yours too. I still hear the voice in the head saying, God is only really present when I'm thinking about God, or I'm doing holy things, or having holy feelings, which is to say about 5% of the time. So I am in constant need, and maybe you are too, of playing with the idea that there has never been and never will be a time when God is not only sustaining our lives, but also whispering in our souls the best thing we can do next to make our lives and the life of our world more beautiful, true, and good. That in every moment there's the opportunity to hear and then to respond to God's whisper. God's whisper. And that God's whisper maybe is the most important thing happening in every moment, which is why we must pay attention. So life is a process. We know this, in which God is seeking to persuade us to go ever more deeply into God's self. We see this process in the gospel reading. It's that reading from John 15th chapter. Still, it's a long section. Starts several chapters before at the Last Supper. Jesus has washed the disciples' feet. And now, once again, he's going to throw something out at them that's going to shatter their narrow and rigid perspective on life. And here it is. Jesus said, I'm sure you paid attention because this jumps out. Jesus says, "You did not choose me, but I chose you." You didn't choose me, he said. I chose you. In our world, we've been trained to imagine we're in control of our lives, mostly, and especially our spiritual lives. Look how we talk about God. Some might say, "I invited Jesus into my heart," or "I decided to get baptized," or "I haven't decided yet which church suits me." All those things, all that way of talking, is to see ourselves as the star of our own story, right? God's there playing a minor supporting role, gets the Oscar maybe for supporting role. And why this came to my mind, like the role of the ruby slippers in The Wizard of Oz, which offer some protection along the way and perform maybe a minor miracle at the end, but only after Dorothy and her friends have done all the heavy lifting. No, it's a story about me. That's what was my life. Jesus said, "No, you did not choose me. I chose you." Chose us for what? A shirts versus skins pickup game? All expenses paid trip to Disney World? No, he chose us to share his ideals, his vision, his commitments. Or as he says, "I chose you to go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last. I chose you to love one another as I have loved you. I chose you to share the life that flows between me and my Father." And then, maybe most shocking of all, "I chose you to be my friends. To be my friends. I no longer call you servants, because the servant doesn't know what the master is doing. I call you friends," he says, "because I've made known to you everything I've heard from my Father." Some of you will know the name of Frederick Buechner. We've read one of his books on occasion and in the past here as well. He found his voice, he's an author, he found his voice writing about the ordinary details of his life precisely because he believes Christ is intimately working in those details, calling him to move more deeply into salvation, which is to know and share the shalom of God here and now. Buechner writes, "Listen to your life. See it for the fathomless mystery it is. In the boredom and pain of it, no less than in the excitement and gladness, touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it," because in the last analysis he writes, "All moments are key moments, and life itself is grace." I commend his work to you. One famous story he tells when his mother was in her 90s and living alone in an apartment in Manhattan, he went to have dinner with her, I think was a regular weekly custom. And he received a call from a friend, and the friend said, "I've just heard that my family has had a horrible accident on the West Coast. And I'm at the airport waiting for my flight. Would you please come and wait with me?" His mother was furious that he would consider ruining their dinner for such a request. But Buechner said, "I saw more clearly than I ever had before, that it is in just such outwardly trivial decisions as this, should I go or should I stay, that human souls are saved and lost." He writes, "I also saw, for what was maybe the first time in my life, that we are called to love our neighbors, not just for our neighbor's sake, but for our own sake. And that when John wrote, quote, "He who does not love remains in death," he was stating a fact of nature as incontrovertible as gravity. You know the old spiritual, what a friend we have in Jesus. But not like a friend on Facebook, where Jesus might grow tired of our foolishness and unfriend us with one click. But like Jesus on the cross, where he reveals that his friendship is eternal. And whether we want it or not, his love will hound us all the days of our life.